fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. Hey, what's up? Welcome into it. It's a Monday. Greatest day of the entire week. Ready to rock and roll for another one. We are just a week and a half away from Easter weekend. I know that's going to blow your mind, so put that into context. We're already over a quarter of the way through 2024, and that makes my brain hurt just a little bit, especially as we creep closer to elections of 2024. Very scary for some, especially on the other side, when apparently Joe Biden, the tweet behind the scenes, Joe Biden, high anxiety and very edgy, very on edge, very angry, very snippy at his team because of how bad it looks like the elections are for him right now and the Democrats overall. So that's kind of funny. I'll take that. Welcome into it. This is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship radio station. We are all over the country, multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen. So wonderful to have you with us for another day. Bottom of the hour, we have Eric Rourke coming on the program. He is the director of research for Numbers USA. They focus a lot of attention on immigration, so we'll chat about the immigration, the Biden administration's response, obviously, since the State of the Union address on where they stand with closing the border. Obviously, he's advocated for saying we need to pass a bill in order for me to have any control over what's going on at the border, which obviously is not the case. But that's the excuse that they're using, and is it really working with the American people? Are people really buying that type of shenanigans? Because remember, Donald Trump, this election is about democracy or authoritarianism. Either about living the American dream, which is open borders, high inflation rates, and high crime rates across the nation, or it's about authoritarianism with Donald Trump, where he'd execute his political opponents and he's going to start a revolt. And in fact, that's what they've gone on again over the weekend, where Donald Trump held a rally in Ohio. And of course, I'm sure you've heard throughout the day today with other shows about the comments completely taken out of context in a wild range. But who cares, right? We don't look at context any longer in our latest in What's Trending.
What's trending today?
If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected... Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars.
Obviously, Donald Trump saying that there's going to be a bloodbath if he doesn't get elected, an insurrection, a violent uprising. The Civil War will commence if Donald Trump's not elected, right? Now, you could say that with the rhetoric that's coming from the left side of the aisle. Have you noticed losing their minds, man, going absolutely bonkers over that comment? Now, if you stop and you use, I don't know, a little bit of an IQ and you actually put things into context, let's play it again, because he makes an interesting claim. And in fact, this is an issue when he was president the first round that I actually disagreed vehemently with the Trump administration on how they were handling this type of action. So let's play this again for a second and step away from the bloodbath. Well, first off, let's focus on the bloodbath that's going to commence if he's not president. And let's try to apply this into context, because apparently we don't do that very often, which is why we have our segment here on the program.
What Donald Trump really meant to say.
If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now.
Okay, so let's stop right there. So he's talking about a topic known as the auto industry, which is a very key issue when he's campaigning in, I don't know, like a state of Ohio, which Ohio and Michigan and Kentucky and Indiana and Iowa and that whole area, the Rust Belt, like they like to call it. And the reason I know that is because I grew up right in the dead heart of that. My grandfather spending 30 plus years with General Motors as an electrician. So yeah, very well aware of the Rust Belt and people's fascination and obsession with cars. I unfortunately did not get that gene in me. I think they're pretty, but I know very little about vehicles. But yeah, everybody has a classic car. Everybody's rebuilding cars. Everybody's building things from the ground up. Most individuals are working at the auto plants assembling cars, which means they're more normally part of the union in the UAW, which is a huge part of that industry in that area over there. So let's just put that into context for a second. And let's think about this concept that Donald Trump's talking about, China wanting to get more Chinese vehicles into the U.S. market and doing it by doing the cheap labor by putting manufacturing plants into Mexico, not producing them in China and shipping them over, and not actually putting manufacturing plants in America and just producing them here, but actually doing it in Mexico and then shipping them across the border. Donald Trump apparently not liking that a whole lot.
And you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us now? We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line.
Okay, first and foremost, here's what I will say. And I said this during the first administration. Andy, you just blindly follow Donald Trump. That's not true. This is one of the biggest issues I had with Donald Trump during the first administration with him, was that I disagree vehemently with that concept. While I want things to be made here in the United States, maybe we should, I don't know, incentivize American industry to be more affordable and be more competitive here at home, as opposed to just punishing what's coming across the border through tariffs. Because I don't believe that that's the way that we should handle economic issues, is just through massive tariffs and saying a 100% tariff coming across the border for a vehicle. That doesn't solve or help anything. We still have the major issue here in the United States. And the major issue, which I know he can't really say at the rally that he's in right now because he's in the heart of the Rust Belt and the heart of the auto union, which he's doing a very good job, by the way, of winning over, because the Teamsters have yet to actually announce their endorsements, although they will eventually endorse Joe Biden. But that'll be the heads of the union. The actual workers themselves, they like Donald Trump. They're not the biggest fan of Joe Biden. And if they go for Donald Trump, even though the union's telling them to vote for Joe Biden and they go for Trump, then that's usually the way we see politics. And he won over the blue collar union worker the first round in that entire area. The steel workers in Pennsylvania, the Rust Belt with the auto workers in Michigan and Ohio and Indiana, that whole area, he won them over, which is what he's campaigning on right now, to win them back over again in this election by saying, we're going to punish them. They need to be made here in America. And I agree. They need to be made here in America, but we need to make ourselves more competitive. How do we make ourselves more competitive? Not paying our workers $60 an hour for a manufacturing assembly line when we could actually lower that, and then we could lower inflation to where they don't have to make that much and still make a decent living and do so. But that takes a lot of it more of a deeper conversation. And that's something that's usually very popular on the campaign trail for people to grasp at that time. They just want to hear, they bad, we want the work, and we want to be paid really good money to do it, which what Donald Trump's doing a good job at during the rally.
And you're not going to be able to sell those cars if I get elected. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars.
For the industry, for the country. A bloodbath for the industry. If he doesn't become president, the point that he's trying to make, again, we have to go through the decoder ring, I guess, through the media to let them know what Donald Trump's trying to say
what
here.
What Donald Trump really meant to say.
That if we allow another administration, another round of the Biden administration to get a second term, then it will be a bloodbath in the auto industry, because Joe Biden himself is killing the unions, especially the auto unions. While the unions are spending money with the Democrats, and they're supporting Joe Biden himself, that he's killing off those unions. Andy, how's he doing that? Well, through the electric vehicle movement. Obviously, you're not going to need. In fact, you could cut anywhere between a third to a half of the auto workers, in not just the ones actually putting the car together, but the ones making certain batteries, the ones that are making axles, the ones that are making alternators, the ones that are making the fuel pumps, the ones that are making this, the ones that are making that. All of these things that are unnecessary in an electric vehicle, he's going to kill off. So while the industry itself is supporting Joe Biden, he's killing off that industry. Donald Trump, the evil, terrible, racist, fascist, narcissistic conservative that the Democrats try to claim that he is, the authoritarian, is literally standing up for the unions and American workers more so than what the Democrats and Joe Biden are. And they don't know how to handle that, which is why we're seeing the complete manipulation of what he said, talking about a bloodbath that he's going to cause some insurrection all over again. when we know that not to be the case. But can we at least put things into context just for a little bit? Because that's what they're so good at on the other side. He went on to say things about immigration as well.
Crime is way, way down. You know why? Because they sent us their criminals. That's why. It's true. It's true. They sent, you know, Venezuela.
Okay, we'll play some more of that. I got to take a break here in just a minute. But he went off and they, of course, are attacking him as well for saying that some people aren't human, which if, I'm telling you, if you sell a whole lot of drugs to the private sector and you're raping children and attacking women, then I would agree that you're probably in some way, shape or form not as human as what others could potentially be. It doesn't matter. The rhetoric has notched themselves up. The dial has been notched up to 11 to try and go after Donald Trump, and to the point to where Donald Trump can say something about a bloodbath, which is completely irrelevant to the nation as a whole, but talking about an industry that he's pandering to on the campaign trail in the state of Ohio. And then we have things like this that were actually mentioned on the Tweety or the X, as Keith Olbermann, host for MSNBC, made a comment that he hoped Donald Trump would be assassinated. And that's totally fine. You're allowed to say something like that, right? Totally allowed to say that. In fact, according to Fox News, it was done off of a post from the Biden-Harris headquarters page on X that has now been flagged because of the comment, saying, quote, Trump says he has been treated worse than Abraham Lincoln, who was assassinated. That post was made on Saturday from the Biden campaign, which already insinuates that they think he's evil and that if he is being persecuted as badly as Abraham Lincoln, then he probably needs to be assassinated with the claim that Donald Trump made. So there's already an insinuation there by Joe Biden, the official page on Twitter from Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for their campaign headquarters. And then Keith Olbermann ends up commenting after that saying, quote, that I hope that's the case. There's always the hope. Olbermann wrote on the link. Obviously not there anymore because of the confrontation that it caused, and it could, quote unquote, violate the policies for X, which to them, gasp, the Democrats actually being censored. But that's what we're up against, is the comments from the White House headquarters, or the Biden headquarters, and from Keith Olbermann, hoping that Donald Trump would get assassinated while they're out there talking about the fact that he's wanting to cause some insurrection and overthrowing of the U.S. government and all this other garbage. Is anybody buying this stuff? Does anybody actually believe this garbage? Because I got to tell you, the more that they talk on the campaign trail, the dumber that I feel that we're getting as a nation. We're losing brain cells. You know, people like Huff, you know, like the canned air, compressed air. What do they call it? Dust? Is it called dusting or whatever they do? The huffing of the air stuff and losing brain cells. That's what I feel like we're doing here in the nation right now, listening to Democrats in the Biden administration, how they can go out there and say that this is a campaign and election for democracy versus authoritarianism, and then make a comment that Donald Trump is being persecuted more than Abraham Lincoln and he was assassinated. Oh, hint, hint, wink, wink. And then we have Democrats out there. Well, we can only hope that's going to be the case. Where's the civility in politics any longer? And by the way, that's very calm compared to some of the other stuff that we've heard throughout the years from the Democrats overall, hoping that he's assassinated. Pictures of his beheadings, plays that were made with the image of him as the leader where they end up attacking and assassinating him. They think this is normal. The violence and the rhetoric from the left is justified in their eyes. It's justified to save democracy. They become the Nazis to try and stop Nazism. They become the fascists to try and stop fascism. They become the authoritarian to stop authoritarianism, and they feel that that's a justified manner because the other side is so evil that it shouldn't even be in the realm of conversation, showing their narrow-mindedness with their own views.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into it. So here's the bigger question to you. And by the way, happy Monday. Here's the bigger question for you. If you hear just the snippet, not the entire audio like we played here, but the little 10 seconds of there's going to be bloodshed or there's going to be terrible things and we're all going to die in the streets. Here's what they're playing from the media.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
That's all they're playing. That's all they care about. That's all they care about from that one. So if you actually put it into entire context, then you understand what he's trying to say with the whole bloodbath. If you don't and you just hear the media clip of that, then here's the question. Where do you go to actually go and find the entire clip and be like, what's he really saying? And as a somewhat well-educated, a little bit higher IQ individual, then that would perk your interest and be like, what's he really trying to say here? Because some will just go along with that and be like, oh, he's talking about a bloodbath. Obviously, he's talking about an insurrection. Because that goes along with the narrative that they've already said, is that he wants to be an insurrectionist. He's going to be an authoritarian. He's going to eliminate his political opponents. He is the Satan, essentially. He's a Satan. He's demonic. There was actually a clip that I saw last week where somebody on one of the talk shows called Donald Trump demonic. They literally went there. They went to that level here already in the country. We're how many months away from the election? And the rhetoric's already dialed up to that caliber already. So here's the next problem, is that if you do try to look for the full content, do you think the mainstream media is going to give it to you? Do you think that unless you actually find the full speech of the full rally that he did in Ohio, that you're going to be able to find that entire context? No. 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 Because, of course, social media and the sites that we get to luckily use that are all controlled by our federal government, that are regulated by our federal government, that has the ability to control what the content actually looks like, that's not going to give you the full context. Because, of course, they want you to only have one narrative, not understanding the true meaning of this one. There's a new study that was done by the Media Research Center talking about Google. Google itself. Now, remember, Google is the owner of YouTube. And according to their study, they say that they've interfered in elections a lot of times over the past few years. And now with artificial intelligence, it's only getting even worse. This was according to Fox News and what's his name, Greg Gutfeld.
Can Google be trusted when their credibility's busted? Yes, Google's apologizing after their new AI Gemini chatbot created historically inaccurate pictures and refusing to show white people. For those unfamiliar with the software, you describe what you want to see, and AI generates the images. Then you hide the best ones from your wife. The glitch came to light when social media users asked Gemini to create various photos. For example, here's what popped up when Gemini was asked by Daily Wire writer Frank Fleming to create an image of a pope. Has there ever been a black pope? I mean, aside from Obama.
So according, okay, that's Gutfeld from Fox News. Can I be honest? I don't find that kind of humor very, very funny. That's like trying to be late night talk show-esque cheesy, and it's just not coming off very well. At least in my opinion, some people may get a giggle out of some of that stuff. But apparently the Google chat thing, by asking to create images, is like completely disregarding white people altogether. Then you try and actually look at content, and they're already censoring content. And according to the Media Research Center, they say that Google has been extremely influential in some of these elections. In fact, to the point of interfering 41 times over the past 16 years, according to the Media Research Center and the research that they've done. 41 times over the last 16 years. Now, you can tie that to the other content that we're allowed to see out there and not allowed to see out there. And then, of course, the bill working through Congress with the TikTok ban, because we're concerned about the data collection and the misinformation that's being sent out to the world for the young generation to see that's not being controlled and regulated by our federal government, that's allowing Facebook and Meta and for Google and YouTube to be interfering with elections, which, according to the Media Research Center, that's happened 41 times over the past 16 years. Interesting. Suppressing certain content, inflating certain content, misrepresenting certain content. And if that's the case, then when Donald Trump talks about a bloodbath, what context are we going to hear it from Google and from our own social media? Gee, I'll hold my breath and wonder on that one.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program. Always great to have you with us. Happy Monday. Man, we got more primaries coming up tomorrow. I know that we're already in essentially default mode because we have our presumptive nominees for both sides, but we still have some primaries. My primary here in the state of Kansas, where I'm based out of with our flagship radio station, ours is coming up tomorrow. So looking forward to getting out and voting along with Ohio, which is why Donald Trump was in Ohio over the weekend, and a few other states as well. So we are still moving through, but yet we are inching closer to that general election of 2024. And it's odd to me that this is the position that the Democrats have taken. I mean, it's surprising, not surprising, right? We have the rhetoric that's already dialed up to notch 11 on the stereo, trying to just say Donald Trump is literally the most evil, horrible human being on the face of the earth, which is hilarious to listen to because you're starting to lose more and more people. Unless you're going further onto the fringe, then even some of the rhetoric from the Democrats are like, don't know if I can get along with that one. Don't know if I can necessarily believe it. So what they do is they use that little tiny clip of Donald Trump talking about a bloodbath, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, this is what he's saying. He obviously wants a bloodbath.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
That's all they play. They don't put it into context. They don't talk about the meaning of what he's trying to say. That's all they say. It's a bloodbath if I don't get elected. To rile up that fear, and some people will go along with it, and those that actually try to do the due diligence to research that will not be able to do so because of the controlled content that's going out on social media, Google, and other places for the media as well. Then, of course, we have the immigration issue, which is really issue number one. We have the number one priority for most Republicans, most voters across the nation, saying that immigration is a problem numero uno after, especially with Lincoln Riley that passed away a few weeks ago, that was mentioned during the State of the Union. We have the Biden administration saying that they need a bill passed for them to enforce it because they literally have no control over the border, even though they're the executive branch with laws already on the books. But that's what they try to say, and that Donald Trump's going to be another hate monger that says that people, everybody coming across the border is not a human being. Just like they tried to say when he was talking about MS-13, that everybody coming across the border is a rapist and a murderer, which is hilarious to listen to again from the other side. Talking about some of that and
what's trending today.
Really happy to have on the program. He's the director of research for Numbers USA. We love this organization. We've had him on many times before. Excited to have on here Eric Rourke. Eric, how are you, my friend?
Doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with you. I appreciate you jumping on here. It is wild to me to look at some of these numbers, which we hear close to 10 million illegal migrants that have come across the border under the Biden administration, that the crime rates are just skyrocketing across the nation, and that the Biden administration's out there telling us that the only way he can shut down the border if it gets out of hand, which I don't know what he defines as being out of hand with what's going on, but the only way he can shut down the border if it gets out of hand is if we pass a new immigration bill like they wanted with the Ukrainian funding conveniently attached to it. What's your thoughts on this madness right now?
Well, you mentioned wild, and that's something I've said. It's going to be a wild ride in 2024 where we're looking at a rematch between President Biden and former President Trump. And it seems one of the main strategies for the Biden administration for reelection is to argue that they're tougher on the border than Donald Trump was. And, you know, I've made this point before. Like Donald Trump or not, I don't think anyone, whether they're going to vote for him or not, are really buying into the fact that, you know, President Biden was tougher on the border. You know, people are, and you also mentioned the fact that immigration is the number one issue. And it's not just Republican voters. This is across the board in poll after poll. This is all voters. And so we're seeing backlash from voters in traditionally blue places like New York City and Chicago. And what President Biden seems to be doing, or at least trying to do, is to say the border, the open border is Donald Trump's fault. And the only thing that can be done is for Donald Trump not to stop Congress from passing a bill to help me, you know, secure the border. Yeah. When obviously the President of the United States has the power already, right? Congress does have needs to act in a capacity. But what Congress needs to do in order to stop what's happening at the border is to end the policies that President Biden has put into place.
Yeah, does anybody actually buy that? I mean, if you look at the basic due diligence and look at some of the numbers and look at illegal crossings from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, we know that that's a complete fabrication and lie when they say they're going to be tougher. But also, isn't it ironic that the Democrats have to use a conservative Republican stance on an issue in order to get elected? I've seen it here in Kansas with our governor's race, where our governor campaigned on tax cuts as a Democrat. And then she obviously doesn't like to do them when she gets in there. But that's how she campaigned, is that they have to campaign as a conservative in a on a conservative policy in order to win because their topics and their stances are extremely unpopular.
Well, and, you know, for I guess it's been 3 years now, we've heard from the Biden administration, certainly from DHS Secretary Mayorkas, that the border was secure and that people who were suggesting otherwise were not being honest about what was going on, which anyone who was observing the situation could see clearly that the border was not secure. And then it was only a few weeks ago that the Biden White House came to the conclusion that this was really a political liability for them. And this is something, you know, when President Biden came to office and said, I'm going to rescind all of the policies that President Trump had put in place to help prevent illegal immigration, you thought, well, they're going to see the effects, the blowback, political blowback is going to be enough, and they're going to, you know, reconfigure. They're going to put some policies back in place, and they're going to do things to stop illegal immigration. And that hasn't been the case. And so at this point, what they're saying is, yes, it's a problem, but, and this is what is also really kind of wild when you sort of frame it this way, is the President of the United States, who is the man who is in control of the most powerful country in the world, is arguing that he can do nothing to prevent people from walking over the border. And his only option at this point is to release them into the United States and to give them work permits. And that's not really a winning strategy going into the election. But as we said earlier, that seems to be what they're wedded to. And, you know, blaming Congress for not doing anything, the argument that the president and, you know, Secretary Mayorkas is also making this argument is, we don't like the laws that are already on the books. And so if Congress doesn't change them to what we are demanding, we're simply going to ignore the laws that are on the books. And we're seeing that. And it goes further than that. It goes beyond that in the sense that what they're doing is they're making law on their own with parole and giving, you know, admitting or releasing, I should say, inadmissible aliens into the United States and giving them work authorizations, which is in direct violation of existing law.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I saw a headline last week that a coalition of attorney generals across the nation are suing and actually trying to get involved in a lawsuit that's ongoing right now from, and I say this in air quotes, but immigration organizations like the ACLU that are all about pro-immigration, a.k.a. they're about pro-open borders and illegal migration coming in, that were suing the Biden administration for even enforcing some of the few laws that they are enforcing right now with turning people away at the southern border. And they're suing the federal government because they're actually doing a little bit of something. And the Biden administration and Mayorkas aren't even fighting it. They're trying to go into settlement court because they're like, well, yeah, okay, I guess we can't enforce those. Sorry. And they're trying to go into settlement here. And now we have a coalition of attorney generals that are suing, saying, wait a second, you're not even standing up and fighting and defending the federal laws that are on the books that you're supposed to be enforcing right now. What the hell's wrong with you? It sounds like that they're working to try and even just get rid of what few laws that they are trying to enforce in the first place.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a strategy that we've seen used in the past. And so, in effect, what's happening is the administration and past administrations have done this too, which has helped get us to where we are today, is they invite these lawsuits. The ACLU is a very good example. And so, you know, internally, they send out the message, here is a lawsuit that you can bring, and when it gets to court, we will settle with you. And what they're doing is circumventing Congress. And this is an example. They're using the courts to make law, and that's where Congress needs to step up. Yes, the laws are on the books, but when we see an executive who doesn't want to enforce the law or is trying to go around what Congress has done, this is when Congress needs to step up. And we're seeing it now in the budget fight. You mentioned earlier the bill that the Senate tried to pass but failed, which attached the Ukrainian funding for Ukraine and for Israel to it. And the border security was sort of, you know, a side effect of this. Well, we're going to check the box and say we've secured the border, while then we move on to our priorities, which are funding Ukraine and Israel, which are important issues, but they're not more important than border security.
Right.
And then that's when Congress needs to step in and say, the laws are on the books. We're going to stand by our position that the executive of the United States of America, the president, must enforce the law. And if no one's going to hold them to that, they're not going to do it. They've made it very, very clear. If we're not forced to enforce the laws, we're going to do what we're going to continue to release millions and millions of people who are inadmissible, coming over the border illegally. We're going to release them into the United States.
Yeah, and they've shown that time and time again. Not only are they not going to enforce it, they're going to stop the states from trying to do something on their own as well. We're talking with Eric Rourke. He's the director of research for Numbers USA, numbersusa.com. Eric, we got just about 20, 30 seconds left here, but is this agenda going to work, or do you think people are starting to catch on here?
Well, I think people have caught on for a long time. The question is, can President Biden sell to independents, really, the swing voters, that he's done a good enough job and they can trust him to do a better job than Donald Trump on the border? I don't think that's going to work for him, but we shall see very shortly.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't see how they can try and talk tough while they continue to see the madness that we're seeing down there right now. Eric, we appreciate the time very much, my friend. We got to get you back on again real soon.
Thank you.
Hey, appreciate it very much. All right, got to take a break here right around the corner. That was Eric Rourke, Director of Research for Numbers USA, numbersusa.com. Fascinating stuff. The stance is interesting, how they're trying to approach this, twisting it all up like a pretzel, and you're supposed to go along for the ride. I don't buy it. I don't see people going along with this. We'll talk about more of that when we come back right around the corner to wrap up today's episode. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into it. If you ever want to know a reason on why we don't trust the government and centralized power with the federal government to give them the full authority to decide what's good, what's bad, what we can do, what we can't do, what we're allowed to see, what we're not allowed to see, with what we can drive, with what we can't drive, with what we can eat, what we can't eat. If you want to, what we can ingest as a vaccine, what we don't ingest as a vaccine. If you want to have just a prime example on why we feel, just going back to, I guess, philosophy and just psychology in general, just human nature 101, is that when someone has absolute power, they corrupt it absolutely, right? So therefore, we limit the ability for people to have all kinds of power, whether it's in the private sector or in the public sector. We don't want a single individual or a single group of individuals to have full authority over somebody else. And that's a prime example of what we just talked about. Imagine, if you will, a federal government where the whole process, here's the way it's supposed to work. Democrats, listen up. I know we're going back to civics class 101 in the eighth grade, which is when I took it. But nonetheless, let's go back to this and just refresh our memory for a second. We have three branches of government, right? Not the fourth branch of the agencies and departments and so on and so forth. We have three branches of government. We have the executive, we had the judicial, and we had the legislative. The legislative branch, which is Congress, the House and the Senate, they write bills based on what needs to be done in the nation. They pass the federal budget. They figure out what the funding looks like. They keep the nation safe based on their duties, which is really three simple duties, which is foreign policy, the military, and making sure there's no monopolies in the free enterprise system. That's really the entire duty of what the federal government's supposed to do. They write these bills to ensure that. Then they make sure that it's passed with the majorities. They make sure the Supreme Court, the judicial branch, makes sure that it's constitutional. It fits within that realm of constitutional law, the rule of law that we have in this nation. And then it's signed or vetoed by the executive branch, which is the president of the United States. And that checks and balance system allows for the for the president, if he or she chooses to do so, to veto that bill, in which case it goes back to Congress for them to either accept that fate of the loss or to override that veto with a three-quarters majority, a supermajority of Congress, to say, no, we really need this to happen. The checks and balance system is a beautiful process. And yet, the sleaziness, the corruption, the things that we see in Washington, D.C. that continues to make us distrust and despise them more and more every day is something as sleazy as cohorting with the legal system, the judicial branch, by saying, hey, private entity that likes our agenda, sue us for the laws that we have on the books that were passed by Congress, that was signed by a president at some point, where as the executive branch, my job, the president, the executive branch, is not to give my opinion on these laws, but to enforce the laws that are on the books. That's what your duty is. That's the role of the president and the executive branch, is to enforce what's on the books. So here's the trick. We don't want to do that. So you, ACLU, you private entity that's in the court system that really likes our agenda with us, sue me for the law I have on the books. And my job was supposed to be really to defend our position, to say this is what's on the books, this is what I have to do. But we won't do that. We'll go to settlement court. We'll settle with you. We'll say, oops, sorry, my bad. We won't actually enforce it. And then we can just have it be rid, because the Supreme Court didn't say that it was unconstitutional. But some type of court said, the court didn't even make a decision. We just want to settle because we don't want to fight it. So therefore, we can continue on with not enforcing the laws that are on the books, because we're politicians now. We're not actually government officials and those representing the people based on the public sector. This is what we're up against. And they're the ones, by the way, trying to act like they're tough on immigration, that are tougher than Donald Trump for some reason on immigration, and that we need Congress to act because we don't have enough laws on the books to actually enforce the border and for us to have the ability to shut down the border. That's the lunacy that we're up against. It's dirty politics, it's sleazy, and it's the Democrat establishment way in Washington, D.C., which is why, thank God, we have a coalition of attorney generals across the nation that are saying, yeah, no, you're not allowed to do that. You have to actually defend your position. You have to enforce the laws on the books, and you have to do what the law tells you that you're supposed to be doing, which is enforce the southern border. And they don't want to, while campaigning that they're going to, even tougher than someone like Donald Trump. It is a loony world out there, and unless you actually understand civics class from the eighth grade in your public education system, you're not going to get this conversation. And everything I just said, which is very simple for you and I, for the most of us, to understand and grasp, it goes right over the heads of the other side, and they don't get,
Donald Trump's an authoritarian,
says the side that refuses to actually enforce the rule of law in the nation as the authoritarians. Oh, the irony, how you can cut it with a butter knife. It's kind of funny. By the way, the Supreme Court, speaking of that system, the Supreme Court is looking now at the government colluding with social media sites on curbing coordination on how much social media companies should be contacting and working with the federal government, especially like some of the quote-unquote misinformation that was spread during COVID-19 and what officials deemed as misinformation that told social media to get rid of. The Supreme Court getting involved on that one as well. Funny how it's all about content control over the past few weeks. Back at it again tomorrow. Until then, be your own voice of reason. We'll see you on the radio.